or let him awaken fully and destroy your world. In the back of my neck, something snapped like a rusty spring, probably the last bit of my courage. I looked at the world serpent. For the first time, I noticed that his glowing green peepers were covered by a thin translucent membrane, a second set of eyelids. You mean he's only partially awake?
If he were fully awake, said the goddess, your entire eastern seaboard would already be underwater.
Ah. I had to resist the urge to throw away the fishing pole, undo my safety harness, and run around the deck screaming like a little Harald. I will release him, I said. But first, Great Ran, you have to promise to negotiate with us in good faith. We want to barter.
Barter with you?
Ran's skirt swirled faster. Ice and plastic crackled. Shopping carts plowed into one another.
By rights, Magnus Chase, you should belong to me. You died of drowning. Drowned souls are my property.
Actually, Sam said, he died in combat, so he belongs to Odin.
Technicalities, Ran snapped.
The faces in Ran's net gaped and gasped, pleading for help. Sam had told me, there are worse places to spend your afterlife in than Valhalla. Imagining myself tangled in that silvery web, I was suddenly grateful to my Valkyrie.
Well, okay then, I said.
I guess I can just let Mr. J wake up fully. I didn't have any plans for tonight.
No,
Ran hissed.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to scavenge along the seafloor when Jormungand gets agitated? Let him go.
And you promise to negotiate in good faith? I asked.
Yes. Fine. I am in no mood for Ragnarok today.
Say, by my troth.
I am a goddess. I know better than to swear by my troth.
I glanced at Sam, who shrugged. She handed me her axe, and I cut the fishing line. Jormungand sank beneath the waves, glaring at me through a bubbling green cloud of poison as he descended, as if to say, next time, little mortal. Ran's swirling skirt slowed to the speed of a tropical storm.
Very well, Inherye. I promised to barter in good faith. What do you want?
The Sword of Summer, I said. I had it with me when I hit the Charles River. Ran's eyes glistened.
Oh, yes. I could give you the sword, but in exchange, I would want something valuable. I'm thinking your soul.
Chapter 34. My sword almost ends up on eBay. I'm thinking not, I replied. Ran made a rumbling sound like a whale with heartburn.
You, the grandson of that meddler, Njord, come here asking to barter, disturbing the world serpent, interrupting my scavenging, and you won't even agree to a reasonable offer? The Sword of Summer is the greatest artifact to come into my nets in ages. Your soul is a small price to pay in exchange.
Lady Ran, Sam took back her axe and slipped down from the fishing chair. Magnus has already been claimed by Odin. He is Inherye. That cannot be changed. Besides, I said, you don't want my soul. It's really small. I don't use it much. I doubt it even works anymore. The goddess's watery skirts swirled. Trapped souls clawed for the surface. Plastic garbage bags popped like bubble wrap. The smell of dead fish almost made me nostalgic for the bull's head.
What do you offer me, then? Ran demanded. What could possibly be worth that sword?
Good question, I thought. I stared into the goddess's nets, and an idea began to form.
You said you were scavenging, I recalled. What for?
The goddess's expression softened. Her eyes shone a greedier shade of green.
Many things. Coins, souls, lost valuables of every description. Just before you woke the serpent, I had my eye on a Chevy Malibu radial hubcap that was worth $40, easy. Just sitting there at the bottom of the harbor. But now, she threw her hands up, gone.
You collect stuff, I corrected myself. I mean, wonderful treasures. Sam squinted at me, clearly wondering if I'd lost my mind, but I was starting to understand what made Rand tick, what she cared about most. The goddess stretched her fingers toward the horizon.
Have you heard of the Pacific Garbage Patch?
I have, Lady Ran, Sam said. It's a floating collection of rubbish the size of Texas. It sounds terrible.
It is amazing, said the goddess. The first time I saw it, I was overwhelmed. It put my own collection to shame. For centuries, all shipwrecks of the northern seas have been mine to claim. Anything lost in the depths comes to me. But when I saw the wonders of the garbage patch, I realized how puny my efforts had been. Ever since, I've spent all my time scavenging the seafloor, looking for additions to my net. I would not have found your sword if I hadn't been so quick.
I nodded with sympathy. Now I could fit this Norse goddess into the Magnus Chase worldview. Ran was a bag lady. I could work with a bag lady. I peered overboard at the floating junk. A silver teaspoon balanced on an island of styrofoam. A bicycle wheel spun past, shredding the ghostly head of a lost soul.
Lady Ran, I said, your husband, Aegir, is the Lord of the Sea, right? You share a golden palace with him at the bottom of the ocean?
The goddess scowled.
What is your point?
Well, what does your husband think of your collection?
Aegir, Ran spat. The great stirrer of sea storms. These days the only thing he wants to do is brew his mead. He's always been a brewer, but lately it's ridiculous. He spends all his time at the hops shop or going on brewery tours with his buddies. And don't get me started on the flannel shirt, rolled up skinny jeans, glasses, and the way he trims his beard. He's always talking about microbrews. He has a cauldron a mile wide. How can he microbrew?
Right, I said. That must be annoying. He doesn't appreciate how important your treasures are.
He has his lifestyle, Ran said. I have mine.
Sam looked bewildered, but all of this made total sense to me. I knew a bag lady in Charlestown whose husband had left her a $6 million mansion on Beacon Hill, but sitting at home alone had made her feel suffocated, lonely, and unhappy. So instead, she lived out on the streets, pushing her shopping cart, collecting plastic lawn ornaments and aluminum cans. That made her feel complete. Ran frowned.
What were we talking about again?
The Sword of Summer, I said, and what I could offer you in return.
Yes.
What I'm offering, I said, is to let you keep your collection.
Frost spread down the ropes of the net. Ran's tone turned dangerous.
Are you threatening to take my stuff?
Oh, no, I would never do that. I understand how valuable.
Because this whirling plastic sunflower ornament right here? They don't make these anymore. It's easily worth $10.
Right. But if you don't give me the Sword of Summer, Surt and his fire giants will come looking for it, and they won't show you such respect. Ran scoffed.
The sons of Muspel cannot touch me. My realm is deadly to them.
But Surt has many allies, Sam said, picking up on the idea. They would annoy you, harass you, take your treasures. They'll do anything to retrieve that sword. Once they have it, they'll start Ragnarok. Then there will be no more scavenging. The oceans will boil. Your collection will be destroyed.
No!
Shrieked the goddess.
Yes, I said. But if you give us the sword, Surt won't have any reason to bother you. We'll keep it safe.
Ran scowled at her nets, studying the patterns of glittering trash.
And how, son of Frey, will the sword be safer with you than with me? You cannot return it to your father. Frey gave up his rights to use the weapon when he gifted it to Skirnir.
For the millionth time, I wanted to find my frolicking summer god dad and smack him. Why had he given away his weapon in the first place? For love? Weren't gods supposed to be smarter than that? Then again, Ran collected hubcaps, and Aegir was into microbrewing.
I'll wield it myself, I said, or I'll take it back to Valhalla for safekeeping.
In other words, you don't know.
The goddess arched her kelpie eyebrows at Sam.
And you, daughter of Loki, why are you siding with the gods of Asgard? Your father is no friend of theirs, not anymore.
I'm not my father, Sam said. I was a Valkyrie.
Ah, yes, the girl who dreamed of flying. But the Thanes of Valhalla expelled you. Why do you still try to earn their favor? You don't need them to fly. You know very well that with your father's blood...
Give us the sword, Lady Ran. Sam's voice hardened. It's the only way to delay Ragnarok. The goddess smiled sourly.
You even sound like Loki. He was such a persuasive speaker. One moment flattering, the next moment threatening. Once, he actually convinced me to lend him my net. That led to all sorts of trouble. Loki figured out the secrets of net weaving. The gods learned how, then the humans. Pretty soon, everyone had nets. My trademark item. I won't be so easily convinced again. I'll keep the sword and take my chances with Surt.
I unstrapped myself from the fishing chair. I moved to the tip of the bow and locked eyes with the goddess. I didn't normally shake down bag ladies, but I had to make Ran take me seriously. I lifted the chain from my belt. The silver links glinted in the fading light.
This chain is also a sword, I said. An authentic blade from Valhalla. How many of those do you have in your net?
Ran started to reach for the chain, then caught herself.
Yes, I can see the sword through the glamour. But why would I trade...
A new sword for an old one, I offered. This blade is shinier, only used once in combat. You could get 20 bucks for it, no problem. The Sword of Summer, however, has no resale value.
True, but...
The other option, I said, is I take the Sword of Summer. It belongs to me. Ran growled. Her fingernails stretched into jagged points like shark's teeth.
You dare threaten me, mortal?
Just telling the truth, I said, trying to stay calm. I can sense the sword within your nets. Total lie. I pulled it from the depths once before. I can do it again. The sword is the sharpest weapon in the 9 worlds. Do you really want it cutting through your net? Spilling all your stuff and freeing all those trapped souls? If they got away, do you think they'd fight for you or against you? Her gaze wavered.
You would not dare.
Trade me a sword for a sword, I said, and throw in one of Eden's apples for our trouble.
Ran hissed.
You said nothing about an apple.
That's an easy request, I said. I know you've got an extra apple of immortality swirling around in there somewhere. Then we'll go in peace. We'll stop Ragnarok and let you go back to your scavenging. Otherwise, I shrugged, you'll find out what the son of Frey can do with his father's sword. I was pretty sure the goddess would laugh in my face, capsize the boat, and add our drowned souls to her collection. But I stared her down like I had nothing to lose. After a count of 20, long enough for a bead of sweat to trickle down my neck and freeze at my collar, Ran snarled.
Very well.
She flicked her hand. The Sword of Summer came flying out of the water and landed in my grip. Immediately it began to hum, agitating every molecule in my body. I tossed my chain overboard. Now the apple. A piece of fruit shot out from the net. It would have beamed Sam between the eyes if not for her fast reflexes. The apple didn't look like much, just a shriveled golden delicious, but Sam held it gingerly, as if it were radioactive. She slipped it into her coat pocket.
Go now, as you promised, Ran said. But I tell you this, son of Frey, your high-handed bargaining will cost you dearly. You have made an enemy of Ran. My husband, Aegir, Lord of the Waves, will also hear about this, if I can ever get him out of the hop shop. For your sake, I hope you're not planning any more sea voyages. Next time, your kinship with Njord will not save you. Cross my waters again, and I will personally drag your soul to the bottom.
Well, I said, that's something to look forward to. Ran spun. Her form blurred into a misty funnel cloud, her nets wrapping around her like twirled spaghetti. She sank into the depths and was gone. Sam shuddered. That was interesting. Behind us, a ladder creaked. Harald's head popped up from below.
Interesting? He demanded. Did you say it was interesting?
He climbed out, glowering at us, his fists balled, his icy blue beard dripping.
World Serpent Flishing, that's one thing. But antagonizing Ran? I never would have taken you aboard if I had known, no matter what Big Boy said. I have to make a living on the ocean. I should throw you overboard.
I'll double your price, Sam said. 10 red gold. Just get us back to dock. Harald blinked.
Okay.
He headed for the wheelhouse. I studied the Sword of Summer. Now that I had it, I wasn't sure what to do with it. The steel glowed with its own light, silvery runes burning along the flat of the blade. The sword radiated warmth, heating the air around me, melting the frost on the railings, filling me with the same sense of quiet power I felt when I healed someone. It wasn't so much like holding a weapon, more like holding open a door to a different time, walking with my mom in the blue hills, feeling the sunlight on my face. Sam reached over. Still wearing her oversized leather gloves, she brushed a tear from my cheek. I hadn't realized I was crying. Sorry, I said, my voice hoarse. Sam studied me with concern. Could you really have summoned the sword from Ran? I don't know. In that case, you're insane. But I'm impressed. I lowered the blade. It kept humming as if trying to tell me something. What did Ran mean? I asked. She said you didn't need to be a Valkyrie to fly. Something about your father's blood? Sam's expression closed up faster than Rand's nets. It's not important.
You sure about that?
She hung her axe on her belt. She looked everywhere but my eyes.
As sure as you could summon that sword.
The outboard engines rumbled. The ship began to turn.
I'll be at the wheel with Harald,
Sam said, apparently anxious to put some distance between us.
I'll make sure he takes us to Boston, and not Jotunheim.
Chapter 35 Thou shalt not poop on the head of Art. After giving me the slightly shriveled apple of immortality, Sam left me at the docks. Not that she wanted to, she said, but her grandparents were going to murder her, and she didn't want to be any later for that. We made plans to meet the next morning at the public garden. I made my way toward Copley Square. I felt a little self-conscious walking the streets with a glowing broadsword, so I had a conversation with my weapon, because that wasn't crazy at all.
Could you do a glamour and turn into something smaller? I asked it. Preferably not a chain, since it's no longer the 1990s?
The sword didn't reply. Duh. But I imagined it was humming at a more interrogative pitch, like,
such as what?
I don't know, something pocket-sized and innocuous? A pen, maybe?
The sword pulsed, almost like it was laughing. I imagined it saying, a pen sword, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
You have a better idea? I asked it.
The sword shrank in my hand, melting into a runestone on a gold chain. The small white stone was emblazoned with a black symbol.
The rune of Frey, I said. I'm not really a jewelry guy, but okay.
I fastened the chain around my neck. I discovered the stone was attached magnetically to its bail, so I could easily pull it off the chain. As soon as I did, the stone grew into a sword. If I wanted it back in pendant form, all I had to do was picture that. The sword shrank into a stone, and I could reattach it to the necklace.
Cool, I admitted.
Perhaps the sword really had heard my request. Perhaps I'd somehow created the glamour by myself. Or maybe I was hallucinating and wearing a huge sword around my neck. I doubted anyone would look twice at my new medallion. They'd see the F and assume it stood for failure. By the time I reached Copley Square, it was fully dark out. No sign of Blitz or Hearthstone, which made me apprehensive. The library had closed for the night. I wondered if Big Boy expected me to meet him on the roof, but I wasn't about to climb the walls of the library. It had been a long day. In Hare Ye, super warrior strength or not, I was exhausted and shaking from hunger. If Big Boy wanted the apple, he would have to come get it. Otherwise, I'd eat it myself. I sat on the front steps of the library, the stone swaying under me like I was still on Harald's ship. To either side of me, a bronze lady statue reclined on a marble throne. I remembered that one symbolized art and the other science, but to me they both looked ready for recess. They leaned on their armrests, metal shawls covering their heads, glancing in my direction like, tough week, huh? This was the first time I'd been alone and not in imminent danger since the funeral home? Did it count as being alone if you were staring at your own dead body? My memorial service had probably happened by now. I imagined my coffin being lowered into an icy grave. Uncle Randolph leaning on his cane, frowning resentfully. Uncle Frederick looking baffled and distressed in his mismatched clothes. And Annabeth, I couldn't imagine what she was feeling. She'd rushed to Boston to find me. She'd learned I was dead. Then she learned I wasn't dead, but she still had to attend my funeral and not tell anyone she'd seen me. I believed she would keep her promise, but our meeting had unsettled me. Some of the things she'd said.
I can help you. I know a place where you'll be safe.
I pulled the battered flyer from my coat pocket. Missing. Magnus Chase, 16 years old. Please call. I studied Annabeth's phone number, committing it to memory. I owed her an explanation, but not yet. I'd already gotten Hearthstone knocked unconscious, Blitzen half petrified, and Sam kicked out of the Valkyries. I couldn't risk dragging anyone else into my problems. According to the Norns, Fenris Wolf would be unleashed 7 days from now unless I stopped it from happening. Ragnarok would begin. Surt would consume the 9 worlds in fire. I would never find my mom or get justice for her murder. Despite all that, every time I thought about facing a wolf, facing the wolf, Fenris himself, I wanted to curl up in my old sleeping bag, stick my fingers in my ears, and hum, "La la la, it's not happening." A shadow swooped over my head. Big Boy the Eagle landed on the bronze statue to my left and promptly decorated her head with eagle droppings. "Dude," I said, "you just pooped on art."
"Did I?"
Big Boy lifted his tail feathers.
"Ah, well, I imagine she's used to it. I see you survived your fishing expedition."
"Surprised?" I asked.
"Yes, actually. Do you have my apple?"
I pulled it from my pocket and tossed it over. Big Boy caught it in his left claw and began to eat.
"Ah, that's the stuff!"
I'd seen some strange things recently, but an eagle eating an apple atop the poopy head of art was definitely in the top 20. "So will you tell me who you are now?" I asked. Big Boy burped.
"I suppose you've earned it. I'll confess. I'm not really an eagle."
"I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you." He snapped off another chunk of apple.
"Also, I doubt you'll make many friends among the gods when they learn you've assisted me."
"Wonderful," I said. "I'm already on Ran and Aegir's naughty list."
"Oh, those two aren't properly gods. They are neither Aesir nor Vanir. I think they're more giantish, though of course the line between giant and god has always been blurred. Our clans have intermarried so many times over the years."
"Our clans, meaning..." The eagle grew. Shadows folded around him, adding to his size like a snowball gathering mass. His shape resolved into a huge old man lounging in the lap of art. He wore iron-shod boots, leather breeches, and a tunic of eagle feathers that was probably not in compliance with the Endangered Species Act. His hair was gray, his face weathered with age. On one forearm, he wore a gold bracer encrusted with bloodstones, the sort of armband worn by the Thanes in Valhalla.
"You're a lord?" I asked.
"A king, in fact."
Big Boy took another bite of apple. Immediately his hair darkened, and some of his wrinkles faded.
"Utgard Loki at your service."
I curled my fingers around my sword pendant.
"Loki as in Loki, Loki?"
The giant king made a sour face.
"You have no idea how many times I get that question. Are you the famous Loki?"
He put famous in air quotes.
"Ugh! I was named Loki before he ever came along. It's a popular name among giants. At any rate, no, Magnus Chase, I am not related to the famous Loki. I am Utgard Loki, meaning Loki of the Outlands, King of the Mountain Giants. I've been watching you for years."
"I get that a lot."
"Well, you're much more interesting than those dense children of Thor who usually challenge me. You'll make a wonderful enemy."
Pressure built in my ear canals. "We're enemies now?"
"Oh, there's no need to draw your sword just yet. Nice pendant, though. Someday we'll find ourselves on opposite sides. That can't be helped. But for the present, I'm happy to observe. I hope you will learn to use the sword without getting yourself killed. That would be amusing. Cert, the old bag of smoke, deserves to be humiliated.
Well, I'm always happy to amuse you.
The giant popped the rest of the apple in his mouth and swallowed it whole. He now looked about 25, with coal black hair, his handsome angular face free of wrinkles.
Speaking of Cert, he said, the Fire Lord will never let you keep that sword. You have, probably until morning before he realizes that you found it.
My hand dropped from my pendant. My arms felt like wet sandbags.
I impaled Cert, cut off his nose, and dropped him in an icy river.
That didn't even slow him down?
Oh, it did. Right now, he's nothing but a seething, noseless ball of fire, raging down in Muspelheim. He'll have to conserve all his power to manifest again on the day of the full moon.
When he tries to free the wolf. Maybe I shouldn't have been chatting about that with a self-declared enemy, but something told me Utgard Loki already knew. The giant nodded.
Cert is more anxious than anyone for Ragnarok to start. He knows he'll get to consume the 9 worlds in flames, and that's what he's been waiting for since the dawn of time. Me, I like the way things are. I'm having fun. But fire giants, there's no reasoning with them. It's all burn, burn, burn. Anyway, the good news is that Cert won't be able to kill you personally until the full moon. He's much too weak. The bad news, he has lots of minions.
I hate minions.
Cert's not the only one after you. Your former comrades from Valhalla have been searching. They're not pleased that you left without permission.
I thought about Captain Ganilla and her bandolier of hammers. I imagine one spinning toward my face.
Well, that's just perfect.
If I were you, Magnus, I'd get out of Midgard by dawn. That should throw your pursuers off your trail, at least temporarily.
Leave the Earth. Simple as that.
I knew you were a quick learner.
Utgard Loki slid off the statue's lap. Standing up, he was easily 12 feet tall.
We'll meet again, Magnus Chase. Someday you'll need a favor only Utgard Loki can grant. But for now, your friends would like a word. Farewell.
Shadows funneled around him. Utgard Loki was gone. In his place stood Blitzen and Hearthstone. Hearth leaped away from me like a startled cat. Blitzen dropped his duffel bag.
Heimdall's horn, kid! Where did you come from?
Where did I? I've been here for almost an hour. I was talking to a giant.
Hearth crept toward me. He poked me in the chest to see if I was real.
We have been here for hours, he signed. Waiting for you. We talked to giant. You just appeared.
A sick feeling rose in my chest.
Maybe we should compare notes. I told them what had happened since we parted ways. Harald's boat. Mr. J and Bag Lady Ran. Which would make an awesome name for a rapper duo. And my conversation with Utgard Loki.
Ah, not good.
Blitzen stroked his beard.
He'd dispensed with the anti-sun gear and was now wearing an eggplant purple 3-piece suit with a mauve dress shirt and a green carnation in the lapel.
The giant told us some of the same things, but the giant did not tell us his own name.
Hearth signed, "Surprise!" opening his pinched fingers on either side of his eyes, which in this context I took to mean, "Yikes!"
Utgard Loki, he spelled out the name, most powerful sorcerer of Jotunheim, can make any illusion.
We were lucky, Blitz said. Utgard Loki could have tricked us into seeing or doing anything. He could have made us walk off a roof, accidentally kill each other, or even eat steak tartare. In fact,
Blitz narrowed his eyes.
We could still be in an illusion. Any of us might be giants.
Blitzen punched Hearthstone in the arm.
Ouch,
Hearth sighed. He stepped on the dwarf's toes.
Or maybe not,
Blitzen decided.
Still, this is very bad. Magnus, you've given an apple of immortality to a giant king.
And what does that mean, exactly? Blitz fiddled with his carnation.
To be honest, I'm not sure. I've never understood how those apples work. I imagine it will make Utgard Loki stronger as well as younger. And make no mistake, when Ragnarok comes, he won't be on our side.
Hearthstone sighed. Wish I'd known it was Utgard Loki. I could have asked about magic.
Humph, Blitz said. You know plenty. Besides, you can't trust a giant to give you straight answers. Right now, you two need sleep. Elves can't stay awake very long without sunlight. And Magnus looks like he's going to fall over.
Blitz was right. I was starting to see double Blitzens and double Hearthstones, and I didn't think it had anything to do with illusions. We made camp in the library doorway, just like old times, except with better supplies. Blitz pulled 3 down sleeping bags out of his duffel, along with a fresh change of clothes for me and some sandwiches, which I ate too fast to taste. Hearth collapsed in his bag and immediately began snoring.
Rest, Blitz told me. I'll keep watch. Tomorrow, we visit my kin.
The dwarf world? My thoughts were getting fuzzy. Your home?
My home.
Blitzen sounded uneasy.
Some of the research Hearth and I did today, it's looking like we'll need more information about the rope that bound Fenris. We can only get that in need of Valir.
He focused on the chain around my neck.
Can I see it? The sword?
I pulled off the pendant and set the sword between us, its light making Blitz's face glitter like a vein of copper in the dark.
Breathtaking, he murmured. Bone steel, or something even more exotic.
Bone steel. TJ and Valhalla mentioned that. Blitz didn't touch the blade, but he passed his hand over it reverently.
To make steel, iron is smelted with carbon. Most swordsmiths use coal, but you can also use bones. The bones of enemies, or monsters, or ancestors.
Oh. I stared at the blade, wondering if my great-great-grandparents might be in there somewhere.
Forged correctly, Blitz said. Bone steel can cut down supernatural creatures, even giants and gods. Of course, you have to quench the blade in blood to harden it, preferably the blood of whatever type of creature you want the sword to be most lethal against.
The sandwiches weren't sitting so well in my stomach. This blade was made like that?
I don't know, Blitz admitted. The sword of Frey is veneer work, which is a mystery to me. It might be closer to Hearth's elf magic.
My spirit sank. I'd had this idea that dwarves were good with weapon crafting. In the back of my mind, I'd been hoping Blitzen could tell me something about the blade's secrets. I glanced at Hearth, still snoring peacefully. You said Hearth knew a lot of magic. I'm not criticizing. I've just never seen him cast any... Well, except maybe opening one door. What else can he do? Blitz set his hand protectively next to Hearth's feet.
Magic drains him. He's careful about using it. Also his family...
He took a deep breath.
Modern elves don't approve of magic. His parents shamed Hearthstone pretty badly. It still makes him self-conscious about casting magic in front of others. Hearthstone wasn't the son his parents wanted, between the magic and the, you know...
Blitz tapped his own earlobes. I felt like saying something rude about Hearthstone's parents in sign language. It's not his fault he's deaf.
Elves, Blitz shrugged. They have a low tolerance for anything that isn't perfect. Music, art, appearances, their own children.
I wanted to protest how messed up that was. Then I thought about humans, and I decided we weren't much better.
Get some sleep, kid, Blitz urged. Big day tomorrow. To keep Fenris Wolf bound, we're going to need help from a certain dwarf. And that help isn't going to come cheap. We'll need you at full strength when we jump to Nida Valir.
Jump, I said. What do you mean, jump? He gave me a worried look, as if I might be getting another funeral very soon.
In the morning, you're going to try climbing the World Tree.
Chapter 36.
Duck!
Call me crazy. I was expecting the World Tree to be a tree, not a row of bronze ducks.
Behold, Blitzen said, the nexus of the universe.
Hearthstone knelt reverently. I glanced at Sam, who had joined us after a daring escape from first period physics. She wasn't laughing. So, I said, I'm just going to point out that this is the make-way-for-duckling statue.
Do you think it's a coincidence? Blitzen demanded. 9 worlds, 9 ducks. The symbolism screams portal. This spot is the crux of creation, the center of the tree, the easiest place to jump from one duck, I mean 1 world, to another.
If you say so. I'd passed these bronze ducks 1,000 times. I'd never considered them much of a nexus. I hadn't read the children's book they were based on, but I gathered it was about a mama duck and her babies crossing a street in Boston, so they put a sculpture of it in the public garden. In the summer, little kids would sit on Mrs. Mallard and get their pictures taken. At Christmas, the ducks got little Santa hats. At the moment, they were naked and alone, buried up to their necks in fresh snowfall. Hearthstone passed his hands over the statues like he was testing a stovetop for heat. He glanced at Blitz and shook his head.
As I feared, Blitz said. Hearth and I have been traveling too much. We won't be able to activate the ducks. Magnus, we'll need you.
I waited for an explanation. But Blitz just studied the sculptures. He was testing out a new hat this morning, a pith helmet with dark netting that draped to his shoulders. According to Blitz, the net fabric was his own design. It blocked 98% of the sunlight, allowing us to see his face while not covering up his fashionable outfit. It made him look like a beekeeper in mourning.
Okay, I'll bite, I said. How do I activate ducks?
Sam scanned our surroundings. She didn't look like she'd slept much. Her eyes were puffy. Her hands were raw and blistered from our fishing expedition. She'd changed into a black wool trench coat, but otherwise she was dressed the same as yesterday. Green hijab, axe, shield, jeans, winter boots. All the accoutrements of a fashionable ex-Valkyrie.
However you do it, she said, do it quickly. I don't like how close we are to the gates of Valhalla.
But I don't know how, I protested. Don't you guys go world jumping all the time? Hearth sighed. Too much.
Kid, Blitz said. The more frequently you travel between the worlds, the harder it gets. It's kind of like overheating an engine. At some point, you have to stop and let the engine cool down. Besides, jumping randomly from one world to another is one thing. Traveling on a quest, that's different. We can't be sure where exactly we need to go.
I turned to Sam. What about you?
When I was a Valkyrie, it would have been no problem. But now?
She shook her head.
You're a child of Frey. Your father is the god of growth and fertility. You should be able to coax Yggdrasil's branches close enough to let us jump on. Besides, it's your quest. You have the best chance of navigating. Just use the sculpture as a point of focus. Find us the quickest path.
She would have had better luck explaining calculus to me. I felt stupid, but I knelt next to the sculpture. I touched the duckling at the end of the line. Cold crept up my arm. I sensed ice, fog, and darkness, somewhere harsh and unwelcoming. This, I decided, is the quickest way to Niflheim.
Excellent, Blit said. Let's not go there.
I was just reaching for the next duck when someone yelled,
Magnus, chase!
200 yards away, on the opposite side of Charles Street, Captain Ganilla stood flanked by two other Valkyries. Behind them was a line of Inheriar. I couldn't make out their expressions, but the gray looming mass of X the Half-Troll was unmistakable. Ganilla had drafted my own hallmates to fight against me. My fingers twitched with anger. I wanted to get a meat hook and go fishing with Ganilla as bait. I reached for my pendant.
Magnus, no! Sam said. Concentrate on the ducks! We have to change worlds now!
On either side of Ganilla, the Valkyries slung glowing spears from their backs. They yelled at the Inheriar to ready their weapons. Ganilla pulled two of her hammers and threw them in our direction. Sam deflected one with her shield. She knocked the other aside with her axe, spinning the hammer into the nearest willow tree, where it embedded itself up to the handle. Across the street, all three Valkyries rose into the air.
I can't fight them all, Sam warned. It's leave now or be captured.
My anger turned to panic. I looked at the row of bronze ducks, but my concentration was shattered.
I need more time.
We don't have time. Sam deflected another hammer. The force of the blow cracked her shield down the middle.
Hearth! Blitzen nudged the elf's arm. Now would be good.
A frown tugged at the corners of Hearthstone's mouth. He reached into his pouch and pulled out a runestone. He cupped it in his hands and muttered to it silently as if speaking to a captured bird. He threw the stone into the air. It exploded above us, creating a rune of burning golden light. Between Ganilla's hunting party and us, distance seemed to elongate. The Valkyries flew toward us at top speed. My Inheriar comrades drew their weapons and charged, but they made no progress. It reminded me of those cheap 1970s cartoons, where a character runs, but the scenery behind him just keeps repeating itself. Charles Street spiraled around our pursuers like a giant hamster wheel. For the first time, I got what Sam had told me about runes being able to change reality.
Raidu, Blitzen said appreciatively. It stands for the wheel, the journey. Hearthstone has bought you some time.
Only seconds, Hearth signed. Hurry. He promptly collapsed into Sam's arms. I ran my hands quickly across the bronze ducks. At the fourth one, I stopped. I felt warmth, safety, a sense of rightness.
This one, I said.
Well, open it!
Blitzen shouted. I rose to my feet. Not sure what I was doing, I pulled my pendant from its chain. The Sword of Summer appeared in my hands. Its blade purred like a demented cat. I tapped it against the bronze duck and sliced upward. The air parted like a curtain. Stretching in front of me, instead of a sidewalk, was an expanse of tree branches. The nearest one, as wide as Beacon Street, ran directly under us, maybe 3 feet down, suspended over a gray void. Unfortunately, the cut I'd made in the fabric of Midgard was already closing.
Hurry! I said. Jump!
Blitzen didn't hesitate. He leaped through the rift. Over on Charles Street, Ganilla screamed in outrage. She and her Valkyries were still flying full tilt on their cartoon hamster wheel, the Inheriar stumbling along behind them.
You are doomed, Magnus Chase!
Ganilla shouted.
We will pursue you to the ends of...
With a loud pop, Harth's spell broke. The Inheriar fell face first in the street. The three Valkyries shot over our heads. Judging from the sound of breaking glass, they must have hit a building over on Arlington Street. I didn't wait for my old hallmates to recover their senses. I grabbed Harth's left arm while Sam took his right. Together, we leaped into the World Tree. Chapter 37. I am trash-talked by a squirrel. I always liked climbing trees. My mom had been pretty understanding about that. She'd only get nervous if I got above 20 feet. Then a little tension crept into her voice. Pumpkin, that branch may not hold you. Could you come down a little? On the World Tree, every branch would hold me. The biggest ones were wider than Interstate 93. The smallest were as large as your average redwood. As for Yggdrasil's trunk, it was so immense it just didn't compute. Each crevice in its surface seemed to lead to a different world, as if someone had wrapped tree bark around a column of television monitors glowing with a million different movies. The wind roared, ripping at my new denim jacket. Beyond the tree's canopy, I saw nothing but a hazy white glow. Below was no ground, just more branches crisscrossing the void. The tree had to be rooted somewhere, but I felt woozy and unbalanced, as if Yggdrasil and everything it contained, including my world, was free-floating in primordial mist, the Ginnungagap. If I fell here, in the best-case scenario, I'd hit another branch and break my neck. Worst-case scenario, I'd keep falling forever into the great white nothingness. I must have been leaning forward, because Blitzen grabbed my arm.
Careful, kid. First time in the tree will make you dizzy.
Yeah, I noticed. Hearthstone still sagged between Sam and me. He tried to find his footing, but his ankles kept bending in odd directions. Sam stumbled. Her broken shield slipped from her grip and somersaulted into the abyss. She crouched, a look of barely controlled panic in her eyes.
I liked Yggdrasil a lot better when I could fly.
What about Ganilla and the others? I asked. Will they be able to follow us?
Not easily, Sam said. They can open another portal, but it won't necessarily lead to the same branch of the tree. Still, we should keep moving. Being on Yggdrasil is not good for your sanity.
Hearthstone managed to stand on his own. He signed, I'm okay. Let's go. Though his hands were so shaky it looked more like, you are a rabbit tunnel. We moved farther along the branch. The Sword of Summer hummed in my hand, tugging me along like it knew where we were going. I hoped it did, anyway. Hostile winds buffeted us from side to side. Branches swayed, throwing deep pools of shadow and brilliant patches of light across our path. A leaf the size of a canoe fluttered by.
Stay focused, Blitzen told me. That feeling you had when you opened the portal? Look for it again. Find us an exit.
After walking about a quarter of a mile, we found a smaller branch crossing directly under ours. My sword hummed louder, tugging to the right. I looked at my friends.
I think we need to take this exit.
Changing branches might sound easy, but it involved sliding down 10 feet from one curved surface to another, with the wind howling and the branches swaying apart. Amazingly, we managed it without anyone getting crushed or falling into oblivion. Navigating the narrower branch was worse. It bobbed more violently under our feet. At one point, I got flattened by a leaf, like a green tarp dropping on top of me out of nowhere. At another point, I looked down and realized I was standing over a crack in the bark. Half a mile down, inside the branch, I could see a snow-capped mountain range, as if I were standing in a glass-bottom airplane. We picked our way through a maze of lichen patches
that looked like hills of burned marshmallows. I made the mistake of touching one. My hand sunk up to my wrist, and I almost couldn't pull it free. Finally, the lichen dispersed into smaller clumps like burned marshmallow sofas. We followed our branch until it split into half a dozen unclimbable twigs. The sword of summer seemed to go to sleep in my hand.
"Well?" Sam asked.
I peered over the side. About 30 feet below us, a larger branch swayed. In the middle of that branch, a hot tub-sized knothole glowed with soft, warm light.
"That's it," I said. "That's our way out."
Blitzen scowled.
"You sure? Nidavellir isn't warm and glowy."
"I'm just telling you, the sword seems to think that's our destination."
Sam whistled silently.
"Quite a jump. If we missed the hole..."
Hearthstone spelled out S-P-L-A-T.
A gust of wind hit us, and Hearth stumbled. Before I could catch him, he fell backward into a clump of lichen. His legs were promptly swallowed in the marshmallow gunk.
"Hearth!"
Blitzen scrambled to his side. He pulled at Hearth's arms, but the mucky lichen held on to his legs like a needy toddler.
"We can cut him out," said Sam. "Your sword, my axe. It'll take time. We'll have to be careful of his legs, but it could be worse."
Naturally, things got worse. From somewhere above us came an explosive, "Yark!" Blitzen crouched under his pith helmet.
"Ratatosk! That damnable squirrel always appears at the worst time! Hurry with those blades!"
Sam cut into the lichen with her axe, but her blade stuck.
"This is like cutting through melting tires. It's not going to be quick."
"Go,"
Hearth signed.
"Leave me."
"Not an option," I said. "Yark!"
The sound was much louder this time. A dozen branches above us, a large shadow passed across the leaves. I hefted my sword.
"We'll fight the squirrel. We can do that, right?"
Sam looked at me like I was mad.
"Ratatosk is invulnerable. There is no fighting him. Our options are running, hiding, or dying."
"We can't run," I said, "and I've already died twice this week."
"So we hide."
Sam unwrapped her hijab.
"At least, Parth and I do. I can cover 2 people, no more. You and Blitz run. Find the dwarves. We'll meet up with you later."
"What?"
I wondered if Utgard Loki was messing with her brain somehow.
"Sam, you can't hide under a green piece of silk. The squirrel can't be that stupid."
She shook out the fabric. It grew to the size of a twin sheet, the colors rippling until the hijab was exactly the same brown and yellow and white of the lichen patch.
"She's right," Hearth signed.
"Go!"
Sam crouched next to him and pulled the hijab over them both, and they vanished, blending perfectly against the lichen.
"Magnus," Blitz tugged at my arm. "It's now or never."
He pointed to the branch below. The knothole was closing. At that moment, Ratatosk broke through foliage above. If you can imagine a Sherman tank covered in red fur, barreling down the side of a tree, well, the squirrel was way scarier than that. His front teeth were twin wedges of white enamel terror. His claws were scimitars. His eyes were sulfur yellow, burning with fury.
"Yark!"
The squirrel's battle cry pierced my eardrums. 1,000 insults were packed into that one sound, all of them invading my brain, drowning out any rational thought.
"You have failed. No one likes you. You are dead. Your dwarf's pith helmet is stupid. You could not save your mother."
I fell to my knees. A sob built in my chest. I probably would have died then and there if Blitz hadn't hauled me up with all his dwarven strength and slapped me across the face. I couldn't hear him, but I read his lips well enough.
"Now, kid!"
Gripping my hand in rough, calloused fingers, he jumped off the branch,
dragging me with him into the wind.
Chapter 38. I break down in a Volkswagen. I stood in a sunlit meadow with